So let's get started again. As usual, I'll talk for a while, and then we'll have a little tiny break, just a leg stretch, and then we'll do another meditation and finish at 6:15. Yeah, something like that. So what I thought I'd do is it's interesting trying to teach this material. So much. I'm amazed. You're here again, Dan Shooter. How did you manage it? You must sleep one day, perhaps after the retreat. Anyway, there we are. That's fantastic. Anyway, welcome, everyone. Who's that poking? Hello. Oh, hello. Nice to see you. I should say your name, but I can't remember it. Joe, that's right.
Well done.
You were going to come and see me, Joe, but never mind. Anyway, no.
Sorry, nice to see you, man. That's a good message. Hi.
That's what we need, more kisses blown. I thought I'd say a little bit more about how to work in, how to work with reflecting on the Lakshana of impermanence. Inconstancy, instability would be other words for it. I rather like inconstancy, that all of your experience is inconstant. I think in some ways that's a more useful translation in meditation. When you think of impermanence, I tend to think of things ending. And if you're not careful, you end up in a kind of stoical acceptance of the end. So, and we can think that that's what Buddhism is teaching, is that things end. You see how the metaphor of impermanence suggests that what we're teaching is things end. And of course, in terms of method, that's very important, but that's a method to wake you up and galvanize you. It's not saying that that's the truth of things, that things end. It's actually trying to open a door, like Yonavacha was saying earlier, to something beyond permanence and impermanence. You're not trying to, at the end of this door, realize that things end. That's not Buddhism, yeah? Buddhism uses that language a lot to motivate you, to wake you up, to wake me up out of complacency. It's not really making a metaphysical point, I don't think, in that when it uses ending in that way, it uses ending to make you realize that time is brief, that you need to get on with what's really important. But the language of impermanence even easily suggests ending. Actually, really, the language of impermanence needs to also embrace beginning. That's also an expression of impermanence, just as ending is. But we tend to attach to either beginning or to ending. And what we're trying to do is release ourselves from either. So perhaps in meditation, well, I found it more useful to think of inconstancy. That nothing in your experiences is constant. So you're deliberately in this approach to the Lakshana, you're deliberately and repeatedly attending to the appearance and disappearance of phenomena in your experience. Yeah. You're deliberately and repeatedly attending to that great matter of anicca, of inconstancy, that experience kind of, it's like lots of little lights flickering on and off, yeah. And you're trying to attend to that more and more deeply. It's not so much about thinking about impermanence. We're all fairly good at thinking about it, but very easily it doesn't do very much. In fact, sometimes thinking about impermanence, perhaps especially talking about it, weirdly seems to inoculate you against its reality. One can give wonderful talks on impermanence and then go off and have an argument the next day, which just shows that it hasn't really touched you very deeply. Something about talking, about speech, particularly about sitting in front of a camera and talking, that you can start to sound very authoritative and really rather remarkable. I mean, at least like you know your stuff. In a way, thinking about it, talking about it, is the least issue. We're trying to find a way of deliberately attending to inconstancy so that we start to see through that into a liberated consciousness that really we can't adequately talk about in any language. So I'm going to suggest two ways. Again, well, firstly, just reiterate briefly what we did this morning. So you might want to try that again this afternoon. In fact, I think probably that's what I'd recommend. It's a shame that we're going to do it once or twice. It's not quite, it's nothing anywhere near enough. But so probably I'd recommend doing it again. The way I found this this reflection helpful, this meditation, meditative reflection helpful, is when I'm in a state that feels quite stuck. I don't know whether you have those. I do. Things for me have been quite difficult of late. I won't bore you with the details. But what happens when you're in difficulty, physical or emotional, is that I tend to treat them as really existing things that exist, that perdure through time, that are just there. I mean, it doesn't need to be something difficult. It can just be, you just feel tired and you just think, okay, well, I'm just tired. That's all there is to it. So that's what my experience is, tiredness. So if I was to look at my psyche, it would just be tiredness, like a fitted carpet all the way through my psyche. That's all there is, and with no pattern, no change. Yeah. Or, you know, if you're feeling in a difficult, painful, emotional state, it's very easy, isn't it, to, and Bhante's talked about this wonderfully, make overgeneralizations from a direct experience. You know, you're feeling unhappy just now, and you can make overlike generalizations that you'll always be unhappy, that's what you're like, that's what my life has been. Bhante talks about it as terms of making illegitimate overgeneralizations from present experience. Interestingly, he uses that as a critique of talking about being in the present moment. He says in one seminar, it would be better to be anywhere but the present moment sometimes, because we tend to easily make illegitimate overgeneralizations from the present moment. I didn't do that very well. I never do things well. I've never done things well, and I never will. Yeah. We make, as Bhante said, illegitimate overgeneralizations from present experience. So this reflection is really good to bring to bear when you're in a state of mind or body that feels to you a stuck state. It can just be that you're ill, for instance, you don't feel very well. And you just, that often brings with it a kind of low mood. And you just feel that that's just a given. That's just how I am just now. It's kind of non-negotiable. It just exists, trust me. Yeah. Or you're in a bad mood, or you're tired or whatever. So then what I would suggest, and I've been doing this particularly when I'm in that kind of, especially emotional state, when I feel difficult emotions, I've been trying to feel that. Just be careful with it, of course, because if you're not careful, you feed the difficult emotions by giving them the wrong kind of attention. So I didn't quite manage it this morning, but I did manage it the other day. So you keep having to be responsive, and you have to keep that wise responsiveness to what's happening in the meditation. You can be trying something, but actually you need to notice whether it's actually making matters worse. So sometimes you can go into difficult emotions in this way, and it just, you haven't got enough awareness, so you just make matters worse. Yeah, and then you need to go back to some other practice. So what I try to do is think, okay, what do I, when I'm in that difficult emotional place, if that's what the issue is, or for me recently it's been being ill, and then quite a low mood coming out of that. Try to feel that very clearly in your body, and realize that you think of it as something that really exists, don't you? I do, you do. I think of it as a given. And you can think of it as, well, I'm sorry, I'll have to suffer it for just now, and so will everyone else. Because if you're going to have to suffer it now, nearly always everybody else has to as well. So what I've been trying to do, sometimes successfully, is just think, okay, so where do I feel it? How do I feel it? Is it really a static state? Is it all I'm feeling just now? Does that feeling come and go, or is it just a given? Even if it's just tiredness, am I just tired the same way all the way through? Yeah. So you can explore that kind of state that you think is a given, that is just as it is, yeah? And see whether you can see, or actually it's flickering. It's not a stable entity called me in a bad mood or me tired or me ill. It's a subtly flickering, changing patterning of sensation. And you try to get closer and closer to that, yeah? So what you might do in this practice today is, what you could do, for instance, is bring up a situation that for you evokes that kind of stuck state. That would be one way, if you want to be a bit creative or even take a bit risky, bring up something that for you feels a stuck state. I don't know, it could be a stuck relationship with somebody, a stuck issue you have in your own heart and mind. Discomfort in your body is another one. Or you can just tune into an uncomfortable area which you want to push away and see if you can tell that it is it. See if you can see through that belief, that view that it's a stuck state, into a changing patterning of sensation, and try to get closer and closer to that, the reality of that. Yeah. And again, as Yonavaj said earlier on, move between working, as it were, locally. So if you're looking at a particular set of sensations, one thing I was doing at one point was really trying to look at this, the tension in my jaw, that again feels stuck, a bit fixed. I can't relax it. It's very good for an area of your body you think, I just can't get into that. I can't kind of open it out. People can say relax and so on, which is usually not helpful. I say to my partner's daughters, relax, and that doesn't work. So don't try it on your friends. What can be a better approach is you go into something that you think is like stuck, like habitual, very clenched tension, which you think is a given, and then you see if you can go into those experiences and see that they're actually coruscating, changing all the time. Yeah, you have to be careful, because if you overfocus on it, you'll make it worse. So if you find that you're doing that, you need to either leave that approach altogether and go back to a samadhi approach and soothe the whole body again. Because remember, we need samadhi so that spiritual death experiences don't feel too intense. Or you just work globally again. You sort of expand to include your whole body so that you're not over-focusing on an area that feels stuck for you. But many of us have, areas in the body that we just feel like, I just can't seem to get anywhere that it just seems fixed. So it's a really good way of softening fixity. Yeah. But remember, you're looking for a sense of relief and release. You're not trying to ponderously think over it being impermanent. You're not trying to write an essay on impermanence. You're just trying to notice that actually the experience that you think is pretty fixed or stuck or gripped or static or a given is actually constantly flickering. And you're trying to feel and sense that, not know it. It involves knowing, but it's led by feeling and sensing. Yeah. We all know it. It's a question of really knowing it. Yeah, just to go back again to be careful not to force it, obviously. And as I said in the question and answers, Nyona Vartya said, be careful not to try and keep up with the pace of change. As I was thinking out loud, and I think that is a kind of species of literalism, as if change is something that's happening, like the flickering of a newsreel, and you could watch it frame by frame. We all know that impermanence is much more mysterious than that. So just check that you're not trying to keep up with the pace of change. So that would be going back to the approach Yonav Archer is using. So this morning, that we tried this morning. So go between the local and the global. Keep having a kind of wise appropriateness to your effort and to what's working and not. Don't just go through it, as it were, unthinkingly. And yeah, remember that you're looking for this sense of relief, but you're not straining off to that, really all you're doing is you're, my suggestion is go into an area that feels pretty stuck for you or fixed and try to see and sense that it's not. We know it isn't. We can teach that it isn't, but can we actually experience it actually isn't in the moment? Yeah. Anyway, that's how I've been finding that approach useful. So that's what I would suggest we do in this meditation. I'll just very briefly outline another tentative approach to anicca, because that approach is taking a kind of a microscopic, even forensic attitude. It's trying to get beyond ponderous thinking about reality into directly sensing that things are all things, including your bad mood or you feeling tired or you criticizing somebody in your head. All things are impermanent. They're inconstant. They're not a given. But that's forensic and microscopic. You can also imagine practicing this telescopically, broadening out. So one way of doing this approach, and how I've been doing it, and we'll say this more about this as we go on through the retreat, but in my own meditation, what I've generally been doing is some samadhi at the start, and then I've been doing one of the one approach to a lakshana, and then I've been opening up to my sadhana. That's how I've been practicing now for quite a while. So you might want to try that, and we'll come on to that later on, but that's how I've been approaching these. But yes, another way is to think telescopically. And in some ways, this, again, I don't know my Pali canon that well. I know it to some degree, but it's extremely large. but from what I understand from people who know it better than me, like Randa Prabha, for instance, who knows it better than almost anybody, that sort of microscopic approach doesn't seem to be the one that the Buddha mostly used. He tended to use a more telescopic approach, and one of his beautiful and just perfectly true sayings is that life is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass. That life is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass. That there are all kinds of moments in Buddhist sutras where that's the kind of emphasis. But life is a dewdrop on a blade of grass. There's, for instance, the Sutta of the 42 Sections, which I think is the first sutra to be translated into Chinese. And that's his conversation with the Buddha and the various monks. And they're all saying how short life is. And somebody says it's like a day. Somebody says, actually, no, it's like a meal. And the Buddha said, no, it's not. It's more like one in and out breath. That's more what it's like. Yeah. So the Buddha's often bringing in that sense of beauty and transience, that life is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass, something beautiful and about to disappear, just coming into being and then about to disappear. It's not even a thing that's hanging there. It's a dewdrop that's just been coming into being and it's just dissolving from being. Sometimes all you need to do in meditation is just remember that. You cultivate samadhi, you soften your heart, you open your heart, you remember, bring to mind your yidam. Sometimes in my case, I bring to mind Bhante, but that I'm surrounded by love and so on. And then all I need to do in that context is just remember very lightly and poetically, just like as if I might be writing a line in a poem rather than a bit of argumentative prose, that life is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass. And I just sometimes that's all you need to have some release, especially if there's some if there's plenty or at least a degree of samatha present. And sometimes in my experience is that I'd be very self-critical, so I easily think that there isn't much present, and then I get up and walk around and realize that there is quite a lot present. So assume there's more samatha present than you realize. So this way of approaching it is just finding ways of remembering that. Yeah? So one approach you might take, and I'm suggesting this tentatively, I've tried it myself, or variants of it, my own kind of versions of it, is just for a moment, yeah, just remember. I know, just settle out down in samadhi for a little while, if you can, at least calm down, relax for a bit. And then what I sometimes do is I just try to think back. You know, I've been ordained now for 30 years. It seems just incredible. All of that seems just the present to me. If you found that, then I don't mind. I find the past understandable, but things that in my mind are the present are actually now long past. You know, like my ordination retreat is as fresh to me now as it ever was, and that's 30 years ago. So yeah, I remember that, and then you go, then go back and back and back and back. And I remember I think my first memory is holding my grandmother's hand and crying because my mother was learning to drive, and my mother was going off for a driving lesson. I seem to remember being tiny and holding my grandmother's hand and weeping because my mother was going. Weirdly, as often the case with those very early memories, I see the memory from behind both of us. I see the little boy and I see my grandmother, who was always dressed in black. She was the last Victorian, I think. She used to wear this little black bonnet all the time and black clothes ever since her husband had died 40 years before. She was wonderful, my grandmother. I used to just hold her hand and cry. So then you go back to that, and then you go back earlier than that. And then before that, you don't know anything yet. There's just this, before your birth, infinite, this sea, isn't there, of time going back, you know, Harold Wilson, you know, Mrs. Thatcher, I suppose, in England, Harold Wilson, Gladstone, all the way back to, you know, infinite time stretching back. The Saxons, you know, and then you just sort of remember that, gosh, that most of this time I wasn't here, and then you just do the opposite. You just think, now here we are today, and then I'm already 59, I'm going to be 60 next year, and before you know it, I'm right at the end of my life, and then there's infinite time the other way, yeah? Again, don't do that very ponderously. It's just a metaphoric reminder of your actual situation, of my actual situation, in the midst of which life is a dewdrop on a blade of grass. Because of those infinite time stretching one way and stretching the other, life is a dewdrop on a blade of grass. So do you see that our life takes place in this tiny, in terms of time and space, in this tiny band. I mean, remember, this is only a working method. This isn't metaphysics. It's just a way of opening stuff up. It's not who knows what our life takes place on. But from this way of working, it's how I've sometimes imagined, you know, when you, your room is completely dark, but there's a light on outside and the door is slightly ajar, and you get this little tiny thin line of light that crosses the room because the door is slightly ajar. Well, it's saying that that's what our life is like, that little tiny thin line of light between two darknesses. Yeah? So you try, in that context, you just, everything you experience now is incredibly precious because it's going to be really brief. So anything you're experiencing now, a headache, being tired, being full of joy and wonder, having your knees ache, feeling tired, it'll be all gone really, really quickly. It's a dewdrop on a blade of grass. It's a splash in the water. It's all of those metaphors that we know so well. So that means that it's infinitely precious just now. So that you try to see your direct experience now in the context of your death. Whatever troubles, whatever happiness there is now is in the context of your death. Yeah. So whatever it is, it's precious. Yeah. It's really worth attending to because it's not going to last very long at all. Your life, my life, is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass. You can keep on. So that might be another approach that you take. Probably what I'd suggest for today is that let's carry on with the approach we did this morning, because it's, I think, a bit confusing if we give you one approach than another, but I don't know what you must do as you please in meditation, just as I do. But, you know, you might tomorrow morning think, oh, well, let's have a go at that. Before it, my way into shunyata tomorrow morning when I do my sadhana is I'm going to just remember that life is like a dewdrop on a blade of grass. I'm going to therefore try to stay with my direct experience and really value it, and because it's precious, because it's going to go. Yeah. Just one last thing about that. Sometimes that can evoke a sense of poignancy, and that's fine. Just be careful not to get hooked on that. One of the a lot of this is coming from my reading and rereading of Burbia or Burbia. So I was very resistant to reading, I have to admit. Yonavacha had to insist actually that I read it. But I did read it twice, and I have thought about it and been practicing it a lot, but yeah, that's a lot of this, a lot of what I've been trying out a bit has been particularly using his reflections on the Lakshanas. But one of the things I learned from him that I thought was very valuable is he said that the more tragic emotions, if you're not careful, are rather hypnotizing. So when you reflect on impermanence, it can evoke sort of more poignant, more tragic emotions. And he was saying, that's fine, but don't get hooked up on them. What you're actually looking for is a sense of relief and release. You can romance tragic emotions and give them a kind of value and weightedness, which actually is unhelpful. And I found that little insight he had into that very useful, because I can do that. I can get sort of rather hypnotized by that side of life. And if you're not careful, you can think that's to do with reflecting on impermanence. So you're really looking for this sense of release and opening up. You're opening up to something that goes beyond permanence and impermanence. You're not trying to open up to some stoical insight that things end. Yeah. You're opening up into the samadhi, as Yonavacha said this morning. And that's boundless and everything you ever want. Yeah, it's not something you don't want. So yeah, just be a bit careful of these senses of poignancy. Fine to have them, great to have them, but in my experience, I've sometimes given them too much weight. I've sometimes got a bit hypnotized by them and mistaken them for a kind of depth. So what we're looking for is this sort of opening up and releasing. Okay, so let's have just a minute or two break, just to stretch your legs if you need to. And then we'll set up for meditation.